When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Ball game over. A perfect game. A perfect game for David Cone.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Call his wife in.
How's everybody doing on this Tuesday morning? A big Tuesday morning as we get ready for Game 5. Knicks 76ers as well as Islanders, Carolina Hurricanes, a couple of playoff games as we get ready to hopefully say goodbye to Philadelphia and the first round. And we move on to take on what looks like the Indiana Pacers, but we'll get there. We come off a miserable night of baseball, and both of these teams are pissing me off as the offenses have just ruined it. Yeah, there's different talking points. There's Joey Wendell and not making the play at home to secure a one-run lead and trying for a double play off a broken bat and making the boneheaded decision to try and get two in that inning in the eighth off of Severino throwing seven no-hit innings and being absolutely brilliant in this game. And Joey Wendell, who's supposed to be there for his defense, and if he can't play defense, I don't know what he does for this team. So that's a major talking point. So is the no-hit stuff from Severino. But the angle of this game is they can't score any runs. And they're honestly a couple of heroics away from Bader getting a single the other day and then the Vientos home run from losing four consecutive games and not scoring any runs over this course of these games, and the offense going back to being completely dormant after going on a nice little streak and playing well in Los Angeles and taking two out of three from the Dodgers. And since then, really nothing. And it's the same culprits. It's Lindor killing this team again, 0-for-4, looking lost at the plate. Nothing from the middle of the lineup, nothing from these veteran stars. They get a home run from Nimmo to start the game, and then they completely waste a brilliant performance. They almost wasted a brilliant performance from Quintana the day before. In this generation of baseball, we don't see 8 innings from a starting pitcher. And then the Mets got it back-to-back nights, back-to-back games. And this offense has done very little to help this team and this bullpen come through and you know, get on a streak here. And it's been disappointing to watch. I mean, that's the story of the game. Yes, Joey Wendell, who was brought in for defensive purposes to maintain a one-run lead in the eighth inning, taking Vientos, who's obviously a substandard at this point, defensive third baseman. It's the right move. Go to the secure your defense, even if it costs you some offense later in the game. But in the eighth inning, you're hoping to just hold on to a one-run lead. He makes a boneheaded decision on a play that is without question, the minute it's hit, obvious that you're not going to turn a double play. Make that out at home and give Severino a chance to do what he's done all game, limit the damage and not give up a run and get it to Diaz, not with the game tied, but with a one-run lead where you feel much better about it. Instead, they blow that run. They allow it to score. They go to the ninth. Diaz gives up a two-run home run. And the Mets come away with a 3-1 loss to the Cubs to start this series and are now have lost three out of four in this homestand. And this offense is absolutely killing them, and Lindor is killing them. And the same thing for the New York Yankees, who after scoring 30 runs and 15 runs back-to-back days to finish off a Milwaukee Brewers series and take two out of three from that first-place team out in the NL Central on the road, feeling good about themselves, come in for the biggest series of this season so far. I mean, I think you could argue the Astros series to start the year, but that's so long ago that we've forgotten about it. And the biggest series of this year so far, the divisional rival that you're most concerned about, the best young team in this division that you're going to be battling with all year. You open up the season series against them on the road in Baltimore. You get a good pitching performance from Clark Schmidt. He gives up one run in 5 2/3, and this offense throws out its fifth. They've played 30 games. Their fifth shutout of the year. How is that possible? Their fifth shutout of the year. and blow it and lose 2-0. Aaron Judge does absolutely nothing when given opportunities with a runner on third and nobody out. They get completely shut down by Rodriguez and this Baltimore staff. And the talking point from this game is Giancarlo Stanton can't run. As we see the Little League thing, as I was literally on the field today, it happened. I had a game today with my son, and the same thing happened. A base hit in front of him, and it looked, and the kid forgot to run, and there was an out at second base. It's not too often you see a base hit. You know, Michael Kay call a base hit. Ah, base hit to right field. Nope, sorry. Forced to second base because Giancarlo Stanton can't move. And he took one step back to first base, and that eliminated him from getting to second base in time. He can't be. He's terrible on the base paths. He can't move. And if he's not, we talk about players who afford you nothing if they don't do the one thing they're good at. If he's not going to power home runs, and he hasn't been terrible. Let's be fair with him offensively. He hasn't been terrible. But he's strictly a DH. He's never going to play the field moving like this. And on the base paths, it's an embarrassment. But that's all noise surrounding this offense, who is hit or miss, who've already been shut out 5 times in this series, in this season, and continue to be the cause for, I mean, every time they get on a roll, this offense can't come through. And after scoring 15 runs in back-to-back days, you would have liked to have saved some against this Baltimore Orioles team, who come out and don't score much themselves, and Clark Schmidt gives you a good performance, and yet nothing. The bullpen comes in, does its job. Clay Holmes comes in and does his job. And there's an error from Volpe who allows the second run, and that's it. And this offense has been feast or famine. And Judge, who you thought was coming out of it, has a bad night with opportunities on with runners in scoring position and strikes out. And you get the same old offense. And these two teams have too many good hitters, too many veterans, too much going for them to have the offenses look like this on night after night. And it needs to change. But right now we're focusing on the Knicks as well as they look to put to bed this series and move on and take care of the 76ers in 5 games. And I'll tell you, I'm concerned about it because I don't want to see Game 6. I understand Game 4 was a laughingstock. I understand right now we're all beating our chest as a city, as a fandom. And hey, we took care of business. We went in there. We heard MVP chants. They're screaming outside the building. It's embarrassing. Philadelphia should be embarrassed. And Embiid's killing the fan base. Ha, 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 ha. What a time to be alive. Well, I'll tell you this. If the Knicks don't figure out a way to win this game and end this series tonight, I don't want to go back to Philadelphia, a fan base that's now been called out by their superstar, a fan base that's probably been embarrassed and made fun of both here and at home over the last couple of days. I don't want to see what happens if they have a team that they don't believe in and have proven it, but they see a team and Embiid get off the deck and come back to New York and win a game 5. Nobody's expecting them to win, forcing a game 6 back in that building. I don't want to go back to Philly. This is an enormous game for the New York Knicks. I know they've built themselves a cushion. I know they've been the better team in the crucial moments, and I still trust that they will be. I still trust that when it comes down to it, that defense will smother this team in the fourth quarter and that Embiid's not going to be able to play a full game and be the best of his ability down the stretch and in his 40 and 45th minute of a game. And I still believe in their ability to offensive rebound and everything and Jalen Brunson's ability to get 40. I still have faith in all of that, especially in this building with this crowd that's going to be absolutely crazy. But they better go out there and get this win. And maybe, just maybe, they cannot fall behind 10 or 12 points in the first quarter. Why don't you get out to a good early start and have this Philadelphia team feel like it's over? Give this mentally soft and mentally weak team nothing to feed off of, nothing to feel good about. Jump out early, which they've been unable to do in this series, even in the games they've won. Get out to an early start and have Philadelphia just get into that warm, comfortable bath of being sent home. Don't give them any belief. Big-time game for the Knicks. Big-time game for the Islanders, who are trying to stave off elimination and force a Game 6 back at UBS Arena and hopefully pull off something that we haven't seen in a very long time that is very uncommon. That happens in hockey more than most, but coming from behind 3-0. And if they can win this game in Carolina and force Game 6, hey, they've got a chance. 877 337-6666. That's where we are on this Tuesday morning. We got baseball teams and offenses that are annoying us and two playoff games that we get ready for later tonight. Joe in Huntington. What's up, Joe?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy.
How you doing?
Good. How are you? I call people buddy. What's up?
Yeah, well, Big Mac, I call you buddy.
Well, that's maybe we're buds.
That's right. We are buds.
You know, look at us.
We have to put our foot on their throat tonight.
I agree.
And we can't, listen, we can't let them, you know, take a lead. We got to get the lead right away.
I think that should be a focal point of the team. I honestly do. I think they should focus on getting off to good starts because they haven't this entire series. And it won't be a death knell because they've proven they can come back from being down 10 points.
I won't feel like
the game is over if they're down 10, but if they ever go up 10, if they're the team that gets off to a good start.
When they went down 10, I used to shut it off.
Sure.
I was pissed.
Yeah, of course.
They could come back from 15-20.
Yeah, I agree. There would be no point in the first half where I'd be, well, this one's over. But at the same time, if they could ever be the team that gets off to the good start, if they could be the team that's up 23-11 at one point in this game, maybe they could force...
They have to start out better.
Yes, they do. And Jalen Brunson needs to get out of the gate hot. He's been cold to start games, other than even when he scored 39 points in game four, he didn't start off the game great. Really, game three, he scored 39, didn't get off to a great start. But game four is really the only game he got off to a hot shooting start. That needs to happen. This team needs to come out and just from the jump, be the team with more energy, be the more desperate team, and get out to a lead and have this Philadelphia team ready to pack their bags and call it a day.
And the Yankees, I don't know, it's feast or famine. It's like, you know, they hit 15 home runs or they get shut out five times. It's crazy.
It's amazing how much they've been shut out, Joe, and thank you for the call. It's amazing to me how often this offense has been shut out. That's a lot. 5 in 30 games? That's far too much. Far too much. They didn't get shut out five times, and last year's offense was brutal. And they had to play 100 games before they got shut out five times. And that was the worst offense they've had in 30 years. This offense is far better, and I understand that they lost Verdugo to for him to go paternity leave to go have his child, and God bless and congratulations. But they still need to be able to string some hits together. That's like, and I'm not going to downplay the 15 runs. I mean, I understand they didn't see great pitching necessarily, but that's a good team in Milwaukee, and I'm not going to dismiss what we saw from Judge and what we saw from Rizzo and what we saw from Gleyber Torres, who did get two hits in this game, and hopefully he's starting to come out of it. But they, in the big moments, we still see the same problems. And Judge had an opportunity to tie the game. He didn't come through. But I think you could make the case that this starting pitching is kind of the story. And Clark Schmidt coming out with another good performance. He gives up a leadoff home run to Henderson, who's been unbelievable this year, his 10th home run of the year. He gives up a home run to Gunnar Henderson and then settles in. And he's dotting that cutter both inside and outside to left-handed hitters. He was throwing more effective curveballs than the lousy one he threw to Gunnar Henderson. He looked good in this game. If you're going to get performances like that from Clark Schmidt, you can't lose those games. And this is the first game they've lost that Schmidt has started all year. But that's a frustrating loss when you pitch well and you hold that offense to really one run in the whole game. They score the second in the eighth inning. Like if you can hold that team to one run, this offense has got to come through. They've got to find a way to score a couple of runs. And it's just been the same story. Without Judge producing, this team doesn't score, even with Juan Soto. And I think this is, we've talked about the impact of Juan Soto. Oh, the impact of Juan Soto. He's had an impact throughout the lineup. They're watching him take batting practice. Everyone fights every pitch. Watching him every at-bat's fun. And all of that's true. And all of that's accurate. It doesn't change the fact that the captain is the driving force behind the team. Aaron Judge is their best player. He's their best hitter. He's their most important player. It's not Juan Soto. Juan Soto is not their best hitter. Juan Soto is not their most important player. That is Aaron Judge. And without Aaron, when Aaron Judge has hit home runs and got going, they score 15 runs. When Aaron Judge strikes out with runners at the corners and less than two outs, they get shut out. That's plain and simple. Plain and simple. They need Aaron Judge to perform. And it's obvious watching the team. He's as great as Juan Soto is. And as much as we all love him and as much as an impact he has on the team, we're waiting for the two of them to get going together. And Judge is without question the most impactful player on this team. And he needs to stay hot. He needs to get on a roll here. And the next three games of this series are important. It's okay to me, take two out of the next three. You can split this series against Baltimore on the road. A four-game set on the road. You lost the first game. Let's not get greedy and try and win the next three. Take two of the next three and figure out a way to split the series. Because right now they're tied in the division, which in April I'm not going to get hung up on. But you don't want to fall behind them too much. You know how young they are. You know how talented they are. And despite the fact they just lost two out of three against Oakland, they're going to score some runs. That offense is dynamic. You know how good they are. And to start this year against them, make a statement. They won the division last year. They won over 100 games. This young group only knows one thing of the New York Yankees: inferior. That's what the Baltimore Orioles in really the 1 year they've had Gunnar Henderson, Rutschman's really breakout season last year. This new all Oriole group knows one thing about the New York Yankees: they're inferior to them. And this is a time to step up and send a message, score some runs. Aaron Judge hit one over that big long wall in left field. Get it done. 877-337-6666. Travis in the Bronx. What's up, Travis?
What's up, Mac? See, Mac, I agree that Judge has been their best player. I don't know if he's their best player this year.
Well, he hasn't been, but he's their best player. He needs to be.
Just based on what we've seen and how much money it's going to cost to take, how much money it's going to take to re-sign Soto. My idea is, I would trade Judge right now for Trout.
Sure.
This way we can shorten that contract,
right?
And then potentially sign another pitcher, which we clearly need next year.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea. Trade Aaron Judge away for an aging Mike Trout who makes just as much money. That's brilliant. What are you, nuts? Are we really getting trade Aaron Judge calls? Are we really getting trade Aaron Judge for Mike Trout calls? And I did a whole thing in the offseason about the Yankees trading for Mike Trout before they got Juan Soto, because I thought he'd be available and I wasn't sure if the Soto thing was going to happen. I love Mike Trout. He's off to a great start, at least power-wise. He's still one of the best players in the league when healthy. You can't trade him for Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is the captain. You want to trade Aaron Judge? Because you need money to sign Juan Soto? Yeah, please, Fleegs, tell me the money difference. What's the money difference that you're going to save all this money for another pitcher?
So Judge makes about $4 to $5.5 million more a year.
Mm-hmm.
And he has only one more year on his contract than Trout.
So you're saving,
and of course they both have no trade clauses.
And they both have no trade clauses, of course. Yeah, and I'm sure Aaron Judge would love to go to Anaheim. Come on, guys, I'm frustrated with him too. I'm frustrated with Aaron Judge. I am.
Yeah, that's $75 million difference in the end. That's the difference for Juan Soto.
I mean, forget that. Forget even that aspect of it. Why would you want to trade Aaron Judge? He's the best hitter in baseball. It's been a month. I know he's hurt often. I get that. When he's healthy, he's the best hitter in baseball. Look by any statistic you want. He's the best hitter in baseball. He's their best player. Trade him. You guys are, I love it. I know that's one gentleman. And I respect him. I don't know if I respect that opinion, but I respect him. But we are not trading Aaron Judge. We're not getting rid of Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is going to be the reason this team is successful. He is their best player. And I don't want to have this debate about who's better, him or Juan Soto. He's better than Juan Soto. Look at him in any way, shape, or form you want. Juan Soto's gotten off to a better start. Juan Soto knows the strike zone better. Juan Soto will strike out less. Juan Soto will be on base more. Juan Soto doesn't impact the baseball the way Judge does. Juan Soto won't have the home runs. Juan Soto doesn't have the RBIs. They pretty much had the same batting average. Juan Soto is a great player who's going to get paid more money than Judge. He's going to get a $500-plus million contract, and he deserves every penny, and I can't wait for the Yankees to be the team to give it to him. But Aaron Judge is their best player. He's their captain, and he's struggling here, and I'm frustrated with him, and it's time for him to get off the deck and start hitting. But by no means do you get rid of Aaron Judge, nor is he a bust, nor is his contract an albatross around their neck. He is their guy. Pete in Poughkeepsie. Pete, please, either, you know, give me an excuse to yell or bring some insanity.
No, C-Mac, by the way, we used to exchange on Twitter, bro. I'm PK, and I just want to say the Trout thing for Judge is that's funny.
Well, Trout, I mean, he's looking to save money. He picked a horrendous example.
And I used to do some work with Trout, great guy, but he's done. He's past his prime anyway.
Well, he's past his prime. I do not think he's done. He's off to a tremendous start.
My apologies. He's off to a great start, and he's a great player. But here's the question I have.
Mm-hmm.
I think Judge is one of the potentially all-time greats. But with the injuries, what's your take, like, long-term with this team?
Mm-hmm.
What is your take? Can he be the guy? He can't do it by himself.
No, well, nobody can do it by themselves in baseball, but him and Soto moving forward, yeah, he can be. Can Aaron Judge be the guy in the middle of the lineup for a World Series championship New York Yankees team moving forward over the next 5 years? Absolutely. Why not?
Agreed.
Of course.
What happens now, though, with, you know, Boone the other day, Boone gets thrown out, whatever. I don't think it was his fault, but pitching, whatever. What? Not that there's any answer, C-Mac, but what's the answer with this team? Because if they don't win it this year, I don't know. I'm just speculating.
It depends on if they don't win it this year, if they make it to the World Series or they play game 7 of the ALCS, I'm having a different conversation than if they don't make the playoffs. So you got to specify what not winning means. Because I know it's all about championships, and so many of you view that as the same. Like, what are you saying, Chris? Losing game 7 of the World Series is exactly the same as not making the playoffs. It's not winning a World Series, you dope. Yeah, well, I don't see it as such. So depending on how they lose, depending on what happens, if they don't make the playoffs, complete regime change. Fire Boone, fire Cashman, bring in new people. That's easy. I still sign still sign Juan Soto and still have Aaron Judge and build around that. Get rid of Gleyber Torres and build around Cole, Judge, and Soto. That's what I would do. If they make it to the World, if they have a successful year but ultimately fall short, I don't know. Trying to improve the team. Re-sign Soto, get rid of Torres, try and bring in different elements, probably get rid of Rizzo, bring in some youth. We haven't even seen Jason Dominguez, who hopefully is coming back in June. You could have, theoretically, a young shortstop, a young center fielder. You could, Ben Rice or somebody else, theoretically, could play first base for this team moving forward. You got Spencer Jones, who started the year with a neck strain but is killing it in minor leagues right now. He could be part of this team. You could be looking at a young, dynamic team with superstars throughout the lineup. Cole, other starting pitching guy, that they're going to have to improve the team. Like, I don't know. What do you think is going to happen? Continue to try and improve the team. But this team is plenty good. This team's tied for first place. The offense, despite all of its struggles, has been good enough to get them to 19-11 and first place in the American League East. They got to get better, and they've done that with Judge doing nothing. He won't continue to do nothing, unless of course you trade him for Mike Trout, which would be a brilliant idea. You probably could throw in Aaron Hicks. They just designated him for assignment. You could probably throw him in the mix.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
3-2, swung on, a pop foul back here.
Ow! 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 It really hit me. I didn't know it was coming back that far.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 35. Mick Monagle here with you. 877-337-6666. You can also hit me up on X or Twitter at CMACWFAN. As we get ready for a big Knick game, we haven't heard anything on Mitchell Robinson. He was a game time decision the other night. We know Bogdanovich will not play in the game with his ankle sprain, and we'll see if Mitchell Robinson is a part of this. And if he's not, and if Mitchell Robinson doesn't play, I'm curious to see what Tibbs does defensively against Embiid. Because, I mean, I like Hartenstein for offense. I think he passes the ball better. I think the offense works real fluid with him. And plus, especially with Jalen, with Brunson's ability to get to the basket and get to the paint and the defenders he draws to him, Hartenstein has a lot of those 5-6 foot little floaters that he hits. But defensively, he struggled in the first parts of that game the other day against Embiid. And at the end of the game, when they shut down Embiid, now part of it could be Embiid's just the amount of minutes he logged and not getting that break. I mean, there was that time where, you know, Brunson went off the floor and Nick Nurse didn't reciprocate and kept Embiid out there. And he played 44 minutes in that game. And that might be a lot for him on that knee. Now, as we get more games into the series, even more. So I'm open to the idea that, hey, he just didn't have the same pep in his step as he did early in the game. But clearly, Achiuwa and OG on Embiid was a much better defensive solution. Much better. So they've started all these games with Hartenstein. I'm wondering, could you see a little bit Achiuwa earlier, especially how it worked at the end of that game, and really try and make things difficult for Embiid right out the gate, or, you know, really try and defend him early on and make things difficult for him, be more physical with him, give him the tougher defenders, or at least the tougher matchup that we saw in game 4. It was a tougher matchup for him. I'm interested to see how the Knicks handle it if Mitchell Robinson isn't there. Because if Mitch Robinson is there, then they probably stick with what they did in the first couple games. They rotate those two guys. Mitchell, you know, clearly in game 1 did an incredible job defensively on Embiid. But how limited is he with an ankle? I don't know. I think Achiuwa is going to play either way. You're going to see more of Achiuwa than you did the last couple home games, no doubt. And we'll see, you know, his ability to close out, his ability to get blocks. He got 4 blocks in limited time defensively in the fourth quarter, including 2 on Embiid. I mean, late in that game, the layup and then the closeout on the three-pointer with the shot clock ticking away, which sent the crowd into a tizzy after the block. He did a really good job. So it'll be interesting to see how they start this game, because I do think, even though they've been able to win without getting off to good starts, and even though they've won these games with Maxey particularly, and Embiid, but Maxey certainly getting off to these really good starts and taking a 10-point lead, a 12-point lead, a 13-point lead, considering what's gone on and considering where Philadelphia is, and if we believe them to be the soft team that we kind of do believe them to be, I would really like to see a good start, make things difficult for them, make things difficult for Embiid, and see if you could just get him to go home. Now, he's tough. I'm not saying he's not tough. And clearly all the nonsense he pulls and, you know, all the cheap shots and everything, he scored 50 the other game. I don't know if he'll just give up necessarily, but considering where he is, considering where that knee may be, considering what's gone on with the fans, just everything about it, falling behind 3-1, doing everything they can to win and still coming up short, losing games up 5 points with 40 seconds left, like all of it. And now falling behind 3-1. If the Knicks could really make things difficult for them early, get out to an early lead, change that dynamic that's been so familiar in this series, you know, maybe you lose a little bit of that fight, and especially on this road, on the road here in for Philly, in the Garden, where the role players, where, you know, Batum and Oubre and all those guys haven't been nearly as successful as they were in Philadelphia, and the shots didn't fall for them at nearly the same clip as it did in Philadelphia. You make things harder on them naturally by playing on the road. You make things harder for Embiid, starting out with maybe thinking defense first and trying to slow him down. And suddenly you get out to the lead, you take it to them, and make them feel like, well, what's the point? We're going to lose this series anyway. Because I don't think they're beyond that kind of mindset. 877-337-6666. Either way, we're going to have one hell of a game tonight, hopefully, which will culminate in the Knicks moving on and taking care of the 76ers in five and getting ready for the next opponent, which very well could be the Indiana Pacers. And beyond that, the Boston Celtics, who took a 3-1 lead last night over Miami, and Kristaps Porzingis left the game in the second quarter, apparently walked out of the locker room wearing a boot over on his right foot, a walking boot on his right foot. It sounds like they're going to check out his calf. I think they believe they've ruled out a major, like, Achilles injury, but hey, strained calves take a while. So while we don't root for injury, what happens, happens, and there's a chance moving forward the Celtics could be without Kristaps Porzingis. Maury and Belmore, tonight is your night, bro.
Tonight is your night, bro. So I'm excited. I think Hartenstein's going to have a comeback win, a comeback game, and he's going to be fine. And God bless you, Achua's going to be fine, mm-hmm. and this team's going to be fine. So I'm looking forward to it.
Here's the big sneeze, Achua.
I love that, by the way, the big sneeze. The boys were talking about it yesterday. They gave you credit for it, so take it.
I wish I remembered which caller was. If you're out there, call back. There was a caller who called up and said the big sneeze. I love
that. That was me.
Oh, was it you?
No, it wasn't me.
I thought I was going to say I would have remembered if it was you, Maury. You got...
Yes, of course. Okay, can I ask you a question? When somebody hits the ball and you're on first base and it's a line drive over to second baseman set, can I ask you what the hell you're doing?
Freeze.
Why are you staying there? So why is Giancarlo the worst piece of this team ever? He brings the whole team down. You're down by one run. Am I wrong?
Well, I mean, you're not wrong in the case that he made a decision going way too far back to first base.
He's the worst.
It's a bad read.
Baseball player.
Yeah, no, he made a bad decision and a bad read. Do you want me to point out all the poor decisions from professional baseball players? Wendell is on the Mets because of his defense, and he decided not to throw home and go for a double play when he had absolutely no chance to get a double play. So the Major League Baseball players aren't above making mistakes, and his speed doesn't afford him any kind of misstep on the base path. If he takes one step in the wrong direction, he's going to be out. And he went too many steps back to first base. He almost went back as if he saw the ball in the glove.
He was ready to go all the way
home.
Yeah,
and he couldn't get back to second base there's no doubt. I don't think he's bringing the whole team down. I don't think he's an albatross around. I mean, he's gotten big hits. He's hit home runs. He's not killing it. He's not having an MVP or an All-Star type year. But Stanton's having what we could have hoped for, I think. I think if Stanton finishes the year giving the numbers he's giving right now, like, because let's just say, let me look at what he's done right now.
He's hitting
240. He's got an OPS of 777. You like the OPS to pick up a little bit, but he's hitting 240.
Yeah,
He's hit six home runs and 16 RBIs. I mean, he's on pace for, 30-plus home runs and 80
RBIs? 100 RBIs.
Yeah, I mean, he's on pace for 30 and 85, 30 and 90 with a 240 batting average and an 800 OPS. If he does that, it'll be phenomenal.
Yeah, but Chris, that's great. But think of what he doesn't do. He doesn't run around the bases.
Correct.
He clogs up the outfield. He doesn't play the other outfield. I know, but the point is he hurts the team in one way, shape, or form. He hurts the team. It's every year. He's that anchor that hurts the team. Yeah, he's the reason why we're not winning.
And Maury, thank you for the call. The lack of roster flexibility and the amount of money he makes, and whether or not that's the main and or only reason guys like Manny Machado and Bryce Harper aren't on the team, fine. You want to have that same old argument we've had for the last 5 or 6 years? Fine. Fine. That's fine. It's fair. If you want to say he's the reason they're losing, he's been injured and bad when he hits. And right now he's hitting for the most – he's not doing great, but he's doing fine. Like and you take into account the really terrible start Like, I think over the last 15 to 20 games, he's been pretty good. He's got 6 home runs, 16 RBIs. He's hitting 240. I mean, he's not hitting the 210. I know 240 isn't great. I'm not saying he's an all-star. He's not killing them right now. On the bases, he's brutal, and he can't play the field. He's a DH. He's a straight-up DH in an era where there aren't a lot of them necessarily. There's not a lot of big poppies who do nothing but DH, can't play the field, lock up the DH spot. The Mets have one in J.D. Martinez. But, I mean, he's not killing them. And we'll see what happens. He might not play. The question is, we haven't even seen Dominguez. Dominguez is going to be part of this team. I don't know when he's going to be back. I don't know how long he's going to go out on rehab assignment. I think they're going to bring him right to the major leagues. I don't think they're going to put him down in AAA. So once he comes up and they have a contested outfield, I don't know if they'll just jettison Grisham. I don't know if that's the role. And then even so, you've got an outfield of Judge, Soto, and you got Verdugo in the mix. They're going to have a plethora of outfielders. And if Giancarlo can't play the outfield, he's going to play less because they're going to rotate guys through that DH spot. There's no way around it. So you might get your wish, because if everyone's healthy and Dominguez comes back and plays well, they're going to, and Verdugo brings that left-handed bat, that contact bat. I mean, it's going to be between him and Verdugo getting at bats. And if Verdugo is even close to himself and Stanton's hitting 240, I don't know how they're going to work it. I really don't. But I understand the base running and the inability to play the outfield. So far, last year he killed them. This year he hasn't killed them. He's not the reason they're not scoring runs. It's not. He's not the reason they're not scoring runs. I understand last night he got killed on the base paths. But, I mean, we've seen boneheaded base path. We've seen Gleyber Torres do a million dumb things on the base path, and he can run.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Anyway, I just don't want to do any more work. I've worked for 64 years, and in July I'll be 86. So, you know, let's face it, my time has come.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 4:52. Little Foo Fighters to get us going to finish out the morning. 877-337-6666. Oh no, this, I'm an idiot. This is not Foo Fighters. I thought this was My Hero. This is Fall Out Boy. I should know Fall Out Boy. Craig made me uncomfortably sing their songs to them in one of the more awkward moments of my entire life. That was, I mean, I know I got on stage, I sang at the pig slapping at Reds before the Giants Raiders game a couple years ago. Obviously, I've done it a couple times at the kickoff the summer party at DJ's, but by far the most awkward thing. I even sang Grease with BT when I filled in for Sal. All of that pales in comparison to have Fall Out Boy in studio. And because I happened to just say this was... The thing about Craig and working with Craig, you can't say anything to the man. I just casually, in passing, said one time, because he was friends with their promotional people or agent or whomever, and he mentioned to me something about Fall Out Boy or something. I said, you know, my kids love them because they do a lot of stuff for, like, Disney stuff. They had a couple of songs for Big Hero 6, the movie. They had the lead singer. Did the intro to a Spider-Man TV show, Spidey and Friends, that my kids liked. So I said, you know, my kids make me listen to Fall Out Boy all the time. He was like, okay. Didn't think anything of it. Then all of a sudden, like 6 months later, hey, Fall Out Boy's coming to the studio. You're a big fan. You're going to sing for them. I'm like, what? What do you mean I'm a big fan? I mean, I like Fall Out Boy. I mentioned once that my sons like Fall Out Boy, and there I was singing songs, their songs back to them. And I don't know if you've heard Fall Out Boy, but it's not easy to sing. It's a lot of, like, high-toned screaming. It's very, very difficult. It's not just, you know, oh, sing Frank Sinatra, sing... Not that his tone is... I'm not trying to disrespect Frank Sinatra. I'm just saying he's easier to just sing. Billy Joel, easier to sing. Even if you're bad at it, you can kind of carry a tune. Oh, yeah, sure. Sing Freddie Mercury. Okay, yeah, sure. Great. Like, there's things that are easy to sing, things that are hard to sing. And doing it right in front of them was very, very... I was never more nervous in my entire life. And never felt more awkward in my entire life. Thanks, Craig, if you're listening. I appreciate it. 877-337-6666. How did I make that mistake, Fallout Boy? We got a big playoff game tonight. And what we've learned from the fans so far, the two big callers that had the big proclamations on what these teams need to do. One, trade Aaron Judge for Mike Trout. And the other, get Anthony Edwards for the Knicks. Sure, why not? Let's make it happen. Sounds easy. And we'll see what the Knicks do. Is obviously the word after that. And you knew it was going to happen. Like, you knew it was going to happen after the Suns fell on their face and got swept away by Minnesota. You knew that the talk of Booker was going to be out. You knew heading into the season that Devin Booker was someone that Leon Rose has been targeting, someone who, you know, I think would definitely work for the New York Knicks. And now that he's been swept and it seems like there's all kinds of dysfunction, all the reports coming out that the new owner there who used to play college basketball at Michigan State and is very close to Tom Izzo has been a disaster there. Has, you know, thinks he knows more basketball than he does because he played for Tom Izzo and is involved. Kevin Durant is unhappy with his role inside the offense. All this stuff, the unhappy nature, the three stars who just absolutely fell in their face and had a miserable, you know, pretty much regular season and then playoff run. Now Booker is going to be the guy. Then you get Stephen A. Smith coming out yesterday and telling you that he wants to be in New York. I mean, I haven't spoken to Booker. But all the scuttlebutt around his people and around the NBA is that he wants to be a Knick. So that's what we're going to, you know, that's going to be on the periphery of this playoff run is how they move forward. Because ultimately, let's be fair, I have immense confidence in this team. And I feel about as good about them as I ever thought I could, especially without Randall. I mean, I don't know how I feel this good. I would have never guessed me being this confident with this group. But if they do fall short, be it, you know, definitely in the next round, which would be disappointing, especially if it's the Pacers. Can you imagine? I'm going to get hyped up for a Pacers series. I don't want to get into it because they haven't done anything just yet. They haven't won this series. They got a big game tonight, but I'll tell you right now, it will bring back all the feels. You want to talk about the feels of 1994 and 1995 and that Knick team and John Starks on the court slapping asses and patting backs and you know, practically on the floor with the Knicks. And the relation to this team and the fan base and how the grittiness and the toughness and how Hart could play for that team and blah, 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 blah. All the connections, the Garden, the Knicks and Rangers both having this unbelievable run and the connections to those that early 90s era of Garden basketball and hockey. You get a Knick Pacers series. I'm going to be watching footage. I'm going to be watching Rick Smith's all day long just to get pumped. They're going to put me in a back room, feed me chopped meat, and watch Rick Schmitz and Reggie Miller and Antonio Davis. That's what I'll watch. Because we had that discussion last year about who's the biggest rival of the New York Knicks, and it's Miami, and it's another series against Miami, and the history of the franchise, and Van Gundy on the floor, and all that. To me, it's still, I hated the Indiana Pacers. I mean, you hated the Chicago Bulls, but they were so damn freaking good, and they had Michael Jordan. It was hard not to respect them on some level. But the Pacers, I hated the Pacers. And lest we forget, the last time, I know no one remembers that team or likes that team, but the last time, you know, Melo and the Knicks had won 50 games and got into the playoffs, who ended that season? So I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I'm just saying. If they manage to win this game tonight, and you got a Pacer series coming up, woo-wee! Let's go. Let's get there. Let's get it done tonight. The Islanders as well. Let's prolong that series and at the very least make it tougher on the Carolina Panthers. Why not? Thank you guys for calling. Thank you for listening, most importantly. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Fliegelman, thank you as well. Let's go Islanders. Let's go Knicks. The warm-up show with Jerry and Al is coming up. I'll see you again tomorrow, 2 a.m. But until then, be well. Everybody have a good day. I'm out of here. Sports Radio 101.